All right, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Bet Amud Aleph. First line, Amar Rabbo. Machloket b'shishichrer chetio, v'niach chetio. The machlok between Rabbi and the Rabbonon with regards to one's ability to free half a slave, that only applies when you free half the slave and the remaining half stays in place. Aval shichrer chetio u'machar chetio. On the other hand, if he sold half of the slave and then freed the other half of the slave, or then gifted the other half, came in the kanafik mine kule divrei kol kana. Because in the end, the entirety of the Eved is leaving his possession. Therefore, everybody agrees that it works in that case. And truthfully, it'd have to work in this situation where he did the mechira, the matana first, and then did the shichrur second. If he does the shichrur first, you're faced with the same problem, which is that you're mishachrer half the Eved, and then you still have to deal with the other half. Once the other half is dealt with already, which is that he's mocher, or he gives a matanav, half the Eved, then when you go to be mishachrer, that half of the Eved, you've taken care of the complete Eved. Whatever residual was there, you have freed. Therefore, it's no different than a get, because a get isha releases the woman entirely. So to hear, the shechrur releases him entirely. Only half is left to release, but it does release him entirely. And therefore, even the chachamim would agree in this case that the shechrur goes through. Amalei Abayi, uvekulo lo plige. Is that really true? That when you release the entirety of the Eved, they don't argue? Vatani, chado. We have one braita that says, a kotev nechazav l'shnei avadav. Person who gifts all of his property to his two avadim, kanu, they acquire it. Umishachrin zedze. And then they release each other, because each of them owns half of the other Eved. And so each one of them releases that half that they own, and now they're both free. And we have an alternate braita that says, Omer kol nechasai nitunim leploni uploni avadai. It says, all my possessions are given to so-and-so, my slaves. Afatzmam lo kanu. They're not successful even at acquiring themselves. My love, how do we explain this discrepancy between the braitot? Harabi va'arabonon. The easiest way to describe it or to attribute authorship of these braitot is say one is authored by Rabbi, who says you can't be mishachrer half an eved. And the Rabbanan will be the author of the other Braita, which says you cannot be Mishachrer half an Eved. And that would explain the difference between the two Braita, the different conclusion of the two Braita. Whereas, according to the way that Rabba is describing it now, the Rabbanan should agree in this case that he goes free because Kulo, in the end, he released all of him, just in different pieces. One of them through Mechira and one of them through Shechrur. The Gemara says, lo, idi b'idi Rabbanan. They're both authored by the Rabbonon. Hadamar kulo, hadamar chetzi chetzi. Difference is what he wrote in the document of gift, or what he said when he gifted the property to the Avadim. So the first case, or the first bright, is a case where he writes in the shtar that he grants each Eved the entirety or the ownership of his property fully. Now obviously you can't grant that to two people, so it was done in a sequential manner. Then it wouldn't matter because the first Eved would acquire everything and the second Eved would have nothing to acquire anymore. So what you have to say is that he writes a shtar to each of the Avadim in which he says that I grant them the entirety of my property, and then he's mezakeh to a third party simultaneously. That third party takes possession of these contracts on behalf of these gifts on behalf of the two slaves. So simultaneously they both take possession of the entirety of his property. Well, the only way for both of them to take possession of the entirety of his property together is to say that they each get half. But that works because each shtar had within it the entirety of his possessions, and that's why they gain their freedom in this case. But in the case where he says chetzi chetzi, then it doesn't work. Even if he grants it to them simultaneously, even if he says to one person, take these on behalf of these two slaves, it won't work because he granted only half of his estate to each of the slaves. That means that there's a residual. Now Rashi claims that the problem here, or the deficit over here, is Kevan dechetzi nechsai katav b'cholchad duma chad polga katav de tervayu b'ikashiur. Rashi claims that maybe he meant the same half. He says 50% of my estate is granted to slave A, 50% of my estate is granted to slave B, and then he hands both of these matanot to a third party to acquire on their behalf. So simultaneously, they each get half of his estate. Rashi claims the deficit here is that he might have granted both of them the same half of the estate. And that means that the other half still remains. And since the other half still remains, they're not free because they're like property of the estate. And the 50% is still within the possession of the Adon or not released. Meaning that assume now that sure, there's something left over in their freedom. If that's the case, they're not free. They're not free. They can't acquire the property. So that's the failure according to Rashi. Many Rishonim disagree with Rashi, the first of which you can see here is Tosafot, who says that doesn't make so much sense. If we had did this in another scenario where it wasn't Avadim, and we said the individual granted half of his estate to one person and half his estate to another person, we would never assume that it was the same half that we granted. We would assume that we gave half and half, and between the two of them, they have 100% of the estate. So why would you make such an assumption by the Avadim to say this and then imply that there's a shiur left over here? The Rashbam over here, Kasher the Rashbam, and he says that he thinks the explanation here is different. He gives an explanation, which in the end Tosafot explains, but is very difficult. He says it's premised on the Shita of Rabbah and other places in Shas, that kol she'ein b'zechazeh, afilu b'vat achat eino. Anything that cannot be done sequentially also cannot be done simultaneously. Doing something simultaneously does not overcome a deficit in something that had to be done sequentially would not work. So over here, if he granted half the estate to one Eved, and then afterwards granted a half the estate to the other Eved, there it's clear it wouldn't work, because then in the first granting there was a shiur, and then in the second granting there is a shiur, and that means that it doesn't work. You can't free the slaves in that case. When you grant the first half to the Eved, the Chachamim say that he doesn't go free. Now, if he doesn't go free, that means that he doesn't have a power of acquisition. That means he owns nothing. He doesn't own himself, and he doesn't own the property because he has no rights in order or ability to acquire the property. Then you grant the other half to the other Eved. It doesn't matter which half you're granting to him at this point because he won't acquire himself and he won't acquire the property. In the end, everything still belongs to the Adon. That is what the Rashbam claims. In Bezech HaZeh, that would be the case. So even though when you do it simultaneously, Bevat Achat, then he's actually given up 100% of the Eved, because between the two Avadim, they own 100% of each other and they can free each other. It won't work because it doesn't work sequentially. It won't work Bevat Achat. That's his claim. So now Tosafot then runs into a problem, because then in the case of Kulo, we also said before that the only way that the case of Kulo works is if he grants ownership to them, to a third party, at the same time. Because if he granted Kulo to one of them, then the other one wouldn't have anything. So then he runs into a problem. Well, then how could you say that? Because if it doesn't work sequentially, it shouldn't work when you do it in tandem. And here, when he does it in tandem, that's the only way it works to be Kulo. Tosafot explains or defends that position of the Rashbam, which is that the failure in the case of Zechazeh, when he does Kulo, is not a failure in the ability to acquire, it's just that the first Eved would get everything, and the second Eved would get nothing. So not that it doesn't work, it just works to the point where it's exclusionary to the second Eved, and because of that, he won't get anything, and the first Eved will go free. So that's how the Balei HaTosafot explain it. Again, it's a difficult explanation, and many of the other Rishonim also disagree with that. The Ramban has an approach to what you're saying, which is that when he grants him chetzi chetzi, he's not necessarily granting him half of the estate, but rather he's granting him half of the value of the estate. It's a motzi mechavero alav araya, the least of the two values that we assume. And then the individual has half the value of the estate. We don't know if within that value, number one, is the Eved included at all. And if he is included, maybe it doesn't matter because he granted him the value and not his ownership in himself in that case. And so the failure over here is that you're looking at the values of the estate rather than actual ownership, and therefore maybe the ownership does not transfer. There is an alternate view in the Rishonim that when he acquires half of the Nechasim, he also acquires a half of himself. That means that it's a Chetzio Ben Chorin, Chetzio Eved. So then his Chetzio Ben Chorin only acquires a half of the half that he was awarded. And in essence, he's only awarded a quarter of the property, and the same would be true of the other Eved. And therefore, neither of them could free each other because they don't own enough of each other in order to free themselves. Each party is missing an ownership, and they're missing that ownership in each other. The Ran says that there's a deficit here because of the shiur, but you actually could make that up by including the language in the shtar, that if you write in the shtar that you're awarding him his chetzi, plus you're awarding the other chetzi to the other individual, even though this is not the document that awards him that in itself would make up for that shiur and then allow each of them to free each other. There's definitely a deficit here if you use the lashon chetzi, The Rishonim are debating or having difficulty explaining what exactly is the deficit when you do it simultaneously with Chetzi Chetzi, but obviously the Gemara believes that there's a failure here if you do it in that manner. So the Gemara says, Ba'amidiktoni Seifa, the continuation of that second Braita says, Bi'amamar Chetzi Chetzi Lo Kanu. That Braita explicitly says, if they do Chetzi Chetzi, there's no Kinyan. Michlal, Dereisha Damar Kulo. Because then, the implications of that are of the safe of the second Braita, it's talking about a case of Chetzi Chetzi, that the ratio, or the part that we had just quoted before, was talking about a case where he granted them full ownership. So Gemara says, no, Perushe Kamifarish. The second half of the Braita is explaining or explicating on the first case. Afatzman lo kanu. They don't acquire themselves. Keitzad. What is the scenario where they don't acquire themselves? Kigon damar, Chetzi Chetzi. That's a case where they say Chetzi Chetzi. Gemara says, Achinami Mistabro. That makes a lot of sense to explain the Braita in that manner. If the case of the Reisha was a case of Kulo, Hashta Mar Kulo Lo Kanu, then in the Reisha where it says that he grants them full ownership, both of them full ownership, it doesn't work. Amar Chetzi Chetzi Mi Boy. Then what do you need the case of Chetzi Chetzi? If Kulo fails, then certainly Chetzi Chetzi is going to fail. So then why would you even need the second half of the Braita? Mar says, Imishum Ha Lo Iria. That is, in of itself, is not a reason to believe that our explanation of the Braita is correct, because Tana Seifa Ligluya Reisha. The Seifa comes to give you indications about what the Reisha was speaking about. Shalot Tomar, Reisha Damar Chetzi Chetzi. Don't say that the Reisha is talking about Chetzi Chetzi like we suggested before. Avamar Kulo Kanu. But if they said Kulo, that it would work. So Tana Seifa. So the Sefer says, Damar Chetzi Chetzi, Michlal, from that you can infer the Reisha Damar Kulo. So then, that would help you in terms of determining what the case of the Reisha was. So the Sefer says, yeah, the obvious case is out. So that means that the Reisha must be talking about the less obvious case. What's that less obvious case? In the case of Kulo Kulo, and yet still there it says it doesn't work. Mar says, Vafilo Achi Lo Kanu, and even despite the fact that you use Kulo, it doesn't work. Now, all that does, it says that we don't have a proof just from the fact that it says Kulo and then Chetzi Chetzi, that would be an unnecessary Braita, and therefore we're definitely right about saying that the second half of the Braita is an explanation of the first half of the Braita, because that I could deal with by just simply saying the second half of the Braita is to illuminate what was the case in the first half of the Braita. But in the end, we can still say what we're saying, which is that the second half of the Braita is explaining the case of the first half of the Braita. We don't have a proof from the language of the Braita, but you could give that explanation to the Braita. And that's why we will explain it as Chetzi Chetzi versus Kulo, and it'll all be under the Shita of the Rabbanan. V'ibay Dema. Here's an alternate answer to deal with this stira, the contradiction between the Braitot. Lokasha kan bishtar echad, kan bishnei shtarot. Depends how many shtarot he uses in order to grant this gift. If he grants the gift in a single shtar, it fails. If he grants it in shtei shtarot, it works. The reason that it fails is because we have gzer shava to get isha. La, which we saw in yesterday's daf, that there is a gzeira shava that correlates the get isha with the get of an eved. The document of emancipation has to look like or has to function similar to that of a divorce document or bill of divorce. So what the Gemara points out here is that there is a gzeira takatuv that one may not divorce two women with a single get. Each woman must have a separate get. The same is true with coming then to the freedom of a slave. If you want to grant them a document of emancipation, each one of them has to have an independent document. There are two ways for an Eved to acquire his ownership of himself. One is Kesef and one is Shtar. Kesef is a vehicle that doesn't appear by a woman and doesn't exist by a woman. That you mentioned yesterday, the difference between Kesef by an Eved versus here, a Shtar by an Eved, which is a Shtar. There's an equation of equivalence because they exist by both of them. Kesef might be governed by the din of a get isha, even though it doesn't exist by a get isha, because it is a vehicle that works by a eved. Over here, you're using that vehicle of kesef. The way that he's being freed here is not through a get shichur in a sense of a real get shichur. He's being freed because he's gaining his ownership through kesef. So the assumption being here, the governance of the freedom of a slave is dictated by the gzer shava to get isha. And therefore, both vehicles of freedom for the Eved, whether it's through Kesef, whether it's through Shtar, is still governed by the rules of Get Isha. And that means that each one has to have an independent release, either through a Get Shechur independently or through ownership independently. They have to have an independent Shtar. And that fails over here. So Gemara says, the Braita that says it fails is because it was all written in one Shtar. The Braita that says it works is because it was written in Tushtarot. And the Gemara challenges it and says, Ma'iria, if it's that's the case, b'shtar echad, Ma'iria chetzi chetzi. Then why do you need to say chetzi chetzi in the case of shtar echad? Afilo amar kulo, nami lo kanu. Even if you write kulo in that shtar, it will fail because the failure is not in the language, the failure is in the mere fact that it's in one document. So then why do you have to say that the case there's chetzi chetzi? Gemara says, achinami kamar. That's exactly what the Braita meant to say. Af atzman lo kanu, they don't acquire themselves. That's only because it was a single document. If it was two shtarot, then they would acquire themselves. And if they say chetzi chetzi, that won't work even if you have two shtarot. So that's the way you'll explain the Braita. The ratio and the safe and the Braita will work that way. The ratio will be a case of kulo. And the case of kulo, it fails because it's shtar echad. Then the Braita says, that's only true if you have shtar echad. Shtei shtarot, it does work, and it'll be fine. But if you have two shtarot, and then you write chetzi chetzi in each shtar, that will fail also. Not because of the technical problem of two shtarot, but because of the language problem now that you said chetzi chetzi. Vibay deima lo kasho. Here's the third approach to deal with this reconciliation of the two braitot. Kan bevat achat, kan bezecher zeh. The answer will be that the way that the kinyan is performed here, in one case the kinyan was performed simultaneous, one case it was performed zecher zeh. In the case, like you were suggesting, if they write the documents and then grant one at a time, then there's nothing to speak about because then there is sequential no matter what, because by definition you wrote one contract, gave it, wrote the second contract and gave it. The case where it works is where they write each contract but do not grant the ownership to the other party, and they can't even give it to them directly. It'll have to be a case where they hand it to a third party who acquires on behalf of both of them simultaneously. But that can work. Again, if you hold that Ede Mesira Karte, this is much easier to explain. If you hold Ede Chatima Karte, this is much more difficult and not necessarily possible to explain how you get this simultaneous acquisition of the contracts, because the contracts are done once they are signed. The Gemara says, well, that's interesting, but bishlama batra lokani dahakane lekamo. In the case where you do it sequentially, then there is a deficit, but there's only a deficit for one of the two parties. Remember here, he's getting the contract or the gift that says in it, you acquire all of my possessions. It's a case of kulo. So when he does it simultaneously, then each one of them gains a half of the property, and they free each other and everything's good. In the case where he does it sequentially, then the first Eved gets everything. The second Eved gets nothing. That means that the first Eved owns the second Eved and owns himself. So the first Eved is free, the second Eved is not free. So then why does the Braita say over here that it fails? It only fails for the second party, it does not fail for the first party. Elekama liknei nafshei, v'liknei lechamrei. That the first one here acquires himself and acquires his friend. And the second contract is meaningless then because he already owns him. And the Adon is no longer the Adon of the second Eved, and he can't free him. So fine. You could argue that it doesn't work for the second Eved, but for the first Eved, it works really well. He owns everything, and he owns himself. So why does the Braita say that they do not acquire themselves in this case? So the Gemara says, Ela mechavarta kidishanina miikara. The first two answers we gave were better answers. This third answer won't work because of this problem, which is that when you do it sequentially and you write kulo in it, then it only fails for the second Eved, does not fail for the first Eved, and that's not what's said in the Braitot. There we have to go with one of the first two explanations, which is either that it's a case where he said kulo, and a case where he said chetzi, and that's the difference between the braitot, or the other difference is whether it's shtar echad or shnei shtarot. Ravashi gives a fourth explanation, shani hotam, the kari kari luhu avadai, because in the second braita he calls them my slaves. It's an interesting approach of Ravashi. The Gemara will reject it. But what he suggests is, if you look at the two languages of the Braitot, if you look at the language of the two Braitot, the first one says, HaKotev Nechasav L'Shnei Avadav. That is a narrative, saying that he wrote a contract, all of his possessions, to his two Avadim. He's not necessarily calling them Avadim, it's a description of what he did, which is that he granted all of his property to his two slaves. The second Braita says, it gives you the language that he wrote. And the language he wrote is, Kol Nechasai Nitunim Leponi Uploni Avadai. All of my possessions are given to so-and-so, my slaves. So in that case, he is actually calling them his slaves in the document. And so that in of itself causes the failure. Because even though he's granting it to them, he's still calling them his slaves, which indicates that he didn't give up ownership of his slaves. So Rav Ashi says, if you look at the first Braita, it's a narrative about what he wrote, but doesn't tell you what he wrote in the document. Seemingly in the document he wrote, all of my possessions go to so-and-so and so-and-so, and he doesn't call them his slaves. Okay. The second Braita, the wording is given to you, the exact language is given to you, and he still calls them slaves. And that's why it fails, because if he calls them slaves, after he gifted it to them, he clearly did not gift them their freedom. That's what Rav Ashi says. Amalei Rav from the Rav Ashi. V'dilma avadai shayu kivar. He says, I don't think that's a good proof, which is, he has to describe the parties to whom he's gifting the property. And how is he going to describe them? He's going to call them by their names? That's not an identifying feature. What he wants to do is identify them, so-and-so, who were my slaves. I mean, these aren't people who have surnames. These aren't people that it's easy to identify. They may not even have, you know, who Ben who they are. They just go by a first name. And so, like, Tevi Avdi, which is the way that it's mentioned in the Mishnayot in Sukkah. He's going by his first name, but he's known as the slave, and that's his almost surname in a sense. So also over here, when he says Avadai, he's not calling them his slaves. He's identifying who the recipients are, not necessarily retaining that ownership of them as slaves. Milotnan, and we have evidence of that in the Mishnah. Hakotev kol nechasav la'avdo yatzah lecheirut. Shi'er karka kosho, lo yatzah lecheirut. This is a Mishnah that we had all the way back on the beginning of the Masechta on Daf Chet, which is that the Mishnah says anybody who gives all of his possessions to his Eved, he goes free. Shi'er karka kosho, if he leaves over a small portion of property, lo yatzah lecheirut. He does not go free. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon disagrees, lo lamhu ben chorin, ad shumar kol nechasai netunim leploni, avdi chutz miachad mibruo shemem. Deficit is only in a case where he says, all my possessions go to so-and-so, except for 1/10,000th of them. So this, if you remember from the Gemara back in Daf Chet, deals with the sugya of Pagina and Dibura, which is, are we able to bifurcate his statement, and then take each statement independently? Rabbi Shimon says, yes, Pagina and Dibura, we do invoke that principle. The Tanakhama says we do not invoke that principle. Therefore, in the first case where he says, kol nechasai netunim leploni, if he gives all possessions to his slave, then the slave acquires himself, as long with all the possessions simultaneously, and he goes free, because he owns himself, and he owns all the possessions, and therefore he is free. But, if he leaves out a portion of land, that means that he's left over something in the ownership here. Now, it's true that he only mentioned land. He didn't mention the slave, but he left something over. What the Tanakhama says is, we don't pagim and diburo, we don't split or bifurcate a statement, and therefore, that shiur, that residual, is equally a residual in his ownership of the property as well as in his ownership of himself. We assume that that residual impacts on the entirety of the gift, and the slave can't go through. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says, Pagin and Dibura. He only mentioned karka. This slave is not, even though he's compared to karka, he is not karka. And therefore, the residual was in the karka. The slave got the entirety ownership of himself. And therefore, he acquires his freedom plus all the property. That's exactly what we say. We bifurcate the two statements and say, even though, by the way, in the statement, he doesn't make two statements. He's only making one statement. So it's an effective bifurcation of his statement, just as if he says, you go free because you own yourself, plus you get all the possessions minus that little piece over there. And that's how we will explain his statement. Except for the case where Rabbi Shimon says, he says, I grant you all my possessions except for 1/10,000th of them. Over there, he does not mention or qualify it with the word karka. He says 1/10,000. Now, Rashi here, and in the beginning of the Masechta, says, oh, the problem is that maybe he thinks the slave is only worth 1/10,000th of his possessions. And when he says 1/10,000th, he means I'm leaving out the slave. That's the way Rashi explains it. All the other Rishonim say, no, simply, he left out 1/10,000th. 1/10,000th across the board includes the slave. He left out 1/10,000th of the slave. That's a failure in freeing the slave, because you didn't free him entirely. You have to free the slave completely, not leaving out any residual piece to him. That's Rabbi Shimon's explanation. That's the Mishnah that we're quoting. And now Raphim is Medayek out of this Mishnah, which is, Halo Amar Hachi, had he not said, Chutz Miechad Miriboshem, Kani, he would have acquired him. Amai, Va Eved Kakarile, doesn't he call him an Eved in this Mishnah? Ella Avadi Shayakavar, when he says Avdi, he doesn't mean my slave, my current slave. It means the one who in the past was my slave, he's now acquiring himself and all this property, he will be a free man. Hachanami, so too over here, Avadai Shayu Kvar. The explanation in the language of the Brit is not saying they are my slaves still, but rather they, my former slaves, are the ones who are acquiring this gift from me. And again, it seems like a very plausible and reasonable explanation of the Brita, even though Rav Ashi's diuk is interesting, it still seems that Raphram's right here, that the language that he's using is to identify the recipients and not to still call them his slaves and maintain ownership over them. So again, we discard the latter two explanations to reconcile the Braitot, and we're left with the first two explanations, which is either Shtarachat or Shtetarot, or the first explanation, which is Kulo versus Chetzi Chetzi. Okay, now we move back to the situation or the circumstance in which you have Chetzi Eved and Chetzi Ben Chorin. It's a case, like we mentioned in the Mishnah, where one of the masters freed him, and the other master retained ownership of him. Now, we know from the Mishnah Achrona that we're going to compel him in the end to free the other half because of the problem of Piria Rivia, which is a significant and serious issue, which the Gemara discussed, and we saw it back in Yevamot as well, the issues of Piria Rivia. But then, in the interim, now, Kho Shor Yom Shel Rabo LeRabo, Yom Shel Atzmo LeAtzmo. If a shor gores him on the day that he belongs to himself, then the benefits of that payment, or really the reparations that are being made, will be made to him. On the other hand, if it happens on the day that he's owned by his master, then that benefits will go to his master. So if there's nezik, if there's damage done here, there's a diminution in his value. If it's on the day that he works for himself or owns himself, then that diminution in value comes to him and he'll get the payment. If it happens on the day that his master owns him, then that diminution in value will go to the master. Now, just theoretically, without knowing what the Gemara says, you would have suggested that there are two owners to this Eved over here. Diminution in value, 50% belongs to each of the owners, and therefore he should get 50% of the diminution, meaning that he'll get half the payment, and the Adon, the master, will get the other half of the payment. But that would have been what you thought theoretically, had you not seen this Gemara. The Gemara comes along and says that's not the case, that it depends on which day that it happens. That's what the Mishnah suggests, that he'll work one day for himself, one day for the other party. Now, this is clearly according to the Mishnah Rishonah, which is that is his status. That's what Tosafot says. But it has implications for the Mishnah Achrona, which is that as, even though the Mishnah Rishonah we reject, the Mishnah Achrona says we compel the master to free him. But there is an interim stage or period in which he has half ownership until we force or compel the other owner to free him. So it has implications for Mishnah Achrona, even though it's been spoken or this qualification is said about the Mishnah Rishonah. It has halachic nafkaminot in that interim stage where he is half and half. So what it suggests here is that it's day-day. What day it happens on is more important than the fact that they each own 50% of him. Elamiato, if that's the case, Yom Shel Rabo Yisa Shifcha, Yom Shel Atzmo Yisa Bat Chorin, he can marry a Shifcha on the day that he's owned by the master, and he'll marry a Bat Chorin on the day that he owns himself. If you're able here to bifurcate his din and say that each day is 100% ownership of each party, right? Rather than looking at his own 50% by himself, 50% by the Adon, what we're saying is, each day, he's owned 100% by that party. So on that day, he's 100% by the Adon. The other day, he's 100% owner of himself. So Gemara says, Isura lo kamrinan. You're making a mistake. There's a difference between Isur and Mamon. When it comes to monetary matters, you can segregate or separate the issues and say, one day is 100% owned by this individual, one day is 100% owned by the other individual. By Isura, you can't do that. You can't say, oh, and one day he can marry a Bat Chorim, because the next day he's still married to this woman, it's going to cause a problem. Or, say the other way around, he's married to Shifcha, the Ben Chorim side of him causes a problem. So by Isura, the reason being that either because what Rashi says that an Isura is not divisible, versus Mamon, which is divisible, or the fact that if he acts like a Ben Chorim for one day, we cannot be Mishtabed, we cannot put him back into being an Eved, and marrying a Bat Chorim is a demonstrable action of him being a Ben Chorin. And once that happens, he could not be put back into slavery. So that's clear that he can't do that, because if he does that, then he'd be completely free. All the Gemara is pointing out is that the two are not mutually exclusive. Just because it doesn't work by Isura doesn't mean that it doesn't work by Mamon. Money or monetary matters can be split. I mean, there's an ability to divide those issues. Whereas by Isura, you can't divide the issues because it's either Asur or it's mutar. You can't have it be both. So tashma. Hemit mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin. So in a case where a shor mu'ad kills an eved knani. We're going to read in Parshat Mishpatim that there is a knas. That when a shor muad kills an eved kanani, he pays 30 shekel, the owner of the shor, to the owner of the eved kanani. Our scenario here is where he's chetzio eved, chetzio ben chorin. The shor gores this eved and kills him, or this half eved, half ben chorin, and kills him. Who does the 30 shekel belong to here? This knas that's going to be paid, who does it belong to? So now, based on the Gemara that we just said before, you would suggest, depends which day, that he gores him. If he kills him on one day, it should belong to him. Kills him on the other day, it should belong to the Adon, the 30 shekel. Or, based on what we said, theoretically, you would assume that it should belong half to him and half to the Adon. So that's what the Braita actually says. Tashma, heimit mi shechetzu ev v'chetzu ben chorin, notein chatzi knas l'rabo, v'chatzi knas, you can't give to him, he's dead. So chatzi knas, kofer l'yoshav, goes to yoshav. Now what that means is, what we spoke about is that when a shor muad kills an eved kanani, there's a knas of 30 shekel kesef, a fixed fine. The reason it's a fine is because it's a fixed amount, no matter what he's worth. On the other hand, if a shor muad kills a free man, in that instance, then the balim are held accountable, but they are not killed for that because it was not they themselves that did this, but rather their property that caused the problem. So now they might be pushim, they might be people who didn't take care of their property, but in the Torah and in our criminal law today, the same thing is true, which is that the person who owns the property can be held accountable for what happens, but they still will not be tried for murder in those cases. And over here, the Torah prescribes that you pay kofar, that you have to pay a redemption fee, machloket in the Gemara and Baba Kama, as to whose kofar you pay. Does he redeem, does he pay the value of the nizak, the one who was killed? Or does he pay the value of himself, meaning the person who was responsible for the death of this individual because his property killed him? And you can understand both. One of them looks at the kofar is that he has to pay for the loss of this individual, and that's the kofar he's paying for. The other one is saying that he's redeeming himself. He did something wrong here. And the monies are redemption of himself. It's a kapara in that sense of kofar. So whether it's kapara or hezek, whichever way you look at it, that kofar is then paid to the family. So now over here, in either scenario, the shor is niskal, is put to death. The question is, the payment for what the shor did depends on the victim of the shor. So if you kill them as an eved kanani, then the valuation is 30 shekel. If you kill him as a ben chorin, then the valuation is his true value, his kofar. So now, here he sure killed him as a chatzi ben chorin and a chatzi eved kanani. So what will happen is he'll pay 15 shekel kesef to the adon, because that's the chetzi eved kanani, which is the 30 shekel, and they'll pay half of the kofar to the yorshim of this eved kanani, or this ben chorin, because not only is there a split in the payment between the two owners, the nature of the valuation is different, whether he's an eved kanani or if he is a free person. So you have both. You'll have a different valuation for each case, and then half of that valuation will belong to the adon, and the half valuation of the other version of valuation will belong to his yorshim. And even though in other places the Gemara darshins that you don't pay chatzi kofar, over here it's really not half kofar, but 100% of the value of the kofar, because he's only owned 50% by this adon. So in essence, 100% of the kofar that is relevant over here, not 50% of the kofar. The Gemara says, Amai, why are you saying that? Hochanami, you just told us before in the Gemara, it depends which day he gets injured, who the value belongs to. So why don't you say the same thing here? Depending which day he got killed, then it will be 30 shekel to the adon on one day, or 100% of the kofar to his yorshim on the other day. Leme yom shel rabo le rabo, yom shel atzmo le atzmo. I mean, if you're consistent in what you told us before, then the outcome here should have been different than what you're describing in the Braita. Gemara says, Shani Ocha, the kakal yakarno. He said a very different case over here, because here, the karen is gone, the principle is gone. So if you think of an eved as being two aspects to the eved, one is that he has an underlying inherent value, which we'll call the goof. And then he also has a value in his output, which we'll call, whether it's the payroll, the interest, whatever you want to call it, but there's a value that this Karen can produce something, which is he has masei yadayim. So when you're talking about hezek, when you're talking about nezek to the eved, then in that case, you're talking about a diminution in his value because his producing value has gone down. the other hand, if the Eved is killed, not only have you only lost the output value, but you've lost the entirety of the inherent value in the Eved. So when you've lost the entirety of the inherent value, over there, we're not going to say, oh, it depends which day he was working on, because both parties now have lost anything or everything. In that case, we have to split the value between them because the Eved is gone completely. In a case where the Eved still exists, then you could say, possibly, we're going to see in a second that's not so simple, depends on which day it happened on. If it happened on the day that the Adon owns him, or the day that he owns himself, will make a difference because he's still a functioning Eved, and he has value to him, and that value still exists for both parties. Now, the truth is, it will depend on how you view the diminution in value here. Well, how do you view the diminution in value from before he was injured to after he's injured? If you simply see that as being nezek, as simply being the lowering of his value, then that's also a pagam, in a sense, in his inherent value. And therefore, the din should be the same, which is that both in the case of nezek and in death, you've now hurt the principle that's here. If you've hurt the principle, then both parties should be the beneficiaries of that payment. On the other hand, if you view the damage to the Eved as being unemployment, that he is on disability now, and that disability will prevent him from doing the work or the output, then that is different. Then it might matter which day it happened on, because the day that it happens on, that person's output was hurt on that day, and he should be the beneficiary of that payment for that lost output. Even though you could argue then that the next day, the other person also loses the output, but because it happened on that day, we're going to say that the present value of the output belongs to the person who he was working for on that day, because the output belonged to him on that day. So that will be exactly what the Gemara says here. So what is the case where the principal is not diminished? In case of death, we know that the principal is lost. In the case of Nezik, the Gemara is asking, what's the situation or scenario where the principal is not lost? Kagon, shikala yado, vitsamta yado. That a case where he hit him on his arm, and his arm here shriveled up or is suffering from some sort of damage. The sofa lachzor. But in the end, it will be cured, and it will go back to being fully functional. So he's on temporary disability. So now, when he's on temporary disability, that means that the underlying principle still has the same value, because in the end, he'll be the same person he was beforehand. What you have here is temporary disability, and that is the loss that's here. So Mar says, Anicha da Abaye, that works well, Mar noten lo shevet gedola, v'shevet ktana shapir. The way that Abaye explains the payment for Nezek in this case is that there's big unemployment and small unemployment. So there are two levels of unemployment that you have. One level of unemployment is that he can't do what he did before. He was before capable of doing more advanced work or more heavy work. Now he's lost that ability and he can only do lighter work, even temporarily. For instance, the Gemara uses as a classic example is Shomer Kishuim, someone who can guard the zucchinis in the field. He can be the equivalent of a scarecrow, or they had people guard it so people don't steal the zucchinis, they scare away the animals. That's light work that he can do even in his state of disability. So the first diminution in value is going from being able to do heavy labor or whatever work that he does, down to being a Shomer Kishuim. The second disability he has is his inability to even be a Shomer Kishuim. I mean, that in the first stages of his disability, he's in either in so much pain or in such a difficult circumstance that he can't even be a Shomer Kishuim. So there are two levels of unemployment or disability that are happening here. There's one which drops him down from an advanced worker down to a simple worker, and a second one that drops him from a simple worker down to being totally on disability. But the way that he describes the damage or diminution in value here, it's all about temporary disability, not about diminution in value. And therefore, all the value here is the present value of his output, or the present value of the loss of his ability to work as he was before, not a diminution in the principal value. Therefore, there you can argue, like Abaye says over here, that when the guy's arm is damaged, and he will come back to be fully healthy again, the loss there was not a principal loss. It wasn't a loss in his underlying or inherent value. It was simply an output loss, or a disability loss. On the other hand, that he only pays him the shevet of each day. Hi, shorhu, v'shorinu mishalim, elenezek. is a case of shor. It's not considered to be a case of adam amazik, but rather a shor that damages. A shor that damages an animal or the money of an individual, property of an individual that does damage, the individual is only chayim for nezek, for a diminution in value. That's the only thing you're chayav for. On the other hand, an adam amazik, if it's an individual who does damage, he's chayav for all five things that are shevet, ripoy, boshet, tsar, and nezek. So those five things only apply when you are an adam hamazik. So now, the way that you describe what the payments are in this case make a difference in how you're viewing this. So now, what Rava says is that there is no diminution in value over here, because in the end, he's going to come back to being healthy. So if I look at it objectively, I look at him, I see an individual who today is worth this, and in a month from now, he'll be worth the same amount. So there's no value. What do? Is I look on every day. Every day that goes by, and he can't work, and he's in bed, then we have to pay him as if he was a regular worker, and you have to make up that money, the money that was there. What can he do? If he can do lighter work, then you make up the differential. If he can do heavier work, if he can't do any work, then you have to pay him the entirety of that schar. Rava says that the only thing that you're chayab for over here is unemployment. Every day that goes by and he's unemployed, you've got to make him whole on that unemployment. Shevet, or unemployment, is only something that Adam HaMazik pays, because he's chayav in all five things. Ishur HaMazik is only chayav in Nezek. As far as Rav is concerned, is there's no Nezek over here, because now he's worth this, and a month from now he'll be worth the same amount, because he'll be healed and all healthy. So the only thing that, between now and then, that exists is unemployment. And that's a day-to-day unemployment. If that's the case, Shor HaMazik is not chayav in Shevet, in unemployment. Only Adam HaMazik is chayav in Shevet, and therefore, there's no chat damim over here. There's no diminution in value, and therefore the owner of the shor will not pay for it. On the other hand, by Abaye, the way that Abaye describes it over here is that we look at a diminution in value by taking the present value of the time of the disability. I mean, that the way that he describes it is there's shevet gdola and shevet ktana. There's the bigger unemployment and the smaller unemployment. The smaller unemployment he looks at very similar to Rava, which is that almost in a sense it's a day-to-day. We have to figure out if can he watch the zucchinis today or can he not watch the zucchinis today. That's his small employment. The larger unemployment is that he used to be able to do heavy work, now he can do less work. What do? We look at now how long will he not be able to do this? We take the present value of that stream and say that that's the damage that was done here. That's Nezek. And so if he calls it Nezek, then even Shor Mu'ad will pay for it, because it's not Shevet, which is one of the five things that only had the Mazik base. Here, it's a way to determine the loss of value, which is the present value of his disability, is the Pichet, is the reduction in value. So what you could suggest here is that in the case of death, where Kali Akarna, the principal, is gone entirely, that's a case where they split it because everybody's lost. In the case where it's a case of Nezek, their case we say it goes to whoever he was working for on that day. Now again, for Rava, it's not even meaningful, because according to Rava, it's all about unemployment. And a shor doesn't pay unemployment, so therefore, there's nothing to discuss over here about splitting it, because the shor is not going to pay for anything in that case. On the other hand, according to Abaye, who says that there is a payment to be made here, because there is a quote-unquote diminution in value, which is the present value of his disability, from being a heavy worker down to being a shomer kishuim, that is now in play. That money, because the shor is going to have to pay, who's he going to pay it to? And so what we suggest is that in the end, we agree that this man is going to go back to his original value when he heals. So that means in terms of the principle of the individual, it's still all there, and there's no permanent value diminution. There is a temporary value diminution, which is the present value of his disability. That, we can say, one day belongs to this one day belongs to the other one, because depending on the day that he got injured, that person owned the output. The person on that day owns his output. And what got damaged here is the present value of his output. And therefore, that person on the day that it happened will be the beneficiary of those payments, because he was the owner of the output on that day, and the present value of that output is what he's getting. And so he's the entitled party here, and you can segregate or separate between the two. I would say that, just theoretically, it's not necessarily as easy as that. Even though I'm describing what the Gemara is saying, you can equally argue the same way, like the same thing, that they both own half the output. And therefore, if the Nezek here is determined by the present value of the loss of output, then that present value of output takes into consideration both days of his work. And therefore the payment should go to each one evenly. Although you should know, the Meiri does suggest something along those lines, that if the damage exists over a large period of time, then it's split between the two owners, and that this is really only said about a case where the damage is limited to a time period in which his ownership is relevant. That's how the Gemara says here, we can segregate or separate between these two cases, the case of death versus the case of damage. In the case of death, both parties will be beneficiaries. In the case of damage, only the party that he's working for on that day will be the beneficiary. Now you solve the problem. It's not a case where he was injured by a shore, rather a case where he's injured by an Adam. So now, if he's injured by Adam, then both Abaye and Rava agree that when you're injured by Adam, that you pay. Whether it's Shevet, it's unemployment, or it's Nezek, doesn't matter, you have to pay for it. So then, we solve that differential, and then you don't have to make this distinction between whether it's Abaye or Rava. V'Abaye Tema, or the other possibility is, Memrahi. Umemra Lova, Lo Svirle. That statement that we made before, which is a pretty controversial statement, theoretically, we wouldn't have thought this. The Gemara brings a statement which qualifies the Mishnah and says that that's only true in our, that what we said in our Mishnah about Chatzi ben Chorin and Chatzi Eved is true by Isur. By Mamon, it will depend on whose day it is. Rova here has a problem because of the Braita. The Braita that says half the kofar goes to so-and-so, half the knas goes to the other party, seems to be in conflict with the previous statement that was made, which is that depending on which day or whose day it is, they are the beneficiary. And according to Abaye, we can still get out of the problem because Abaye can make a distinction between the Nezek and the death case. But Rava, who can't make that distinction, is stuck. What Rava will say to you is, I'm not stuck. You know why I'm not stuck? Because what we're talking about here is a Braita. The other statement was simply a Memra. It was a Memra of Amoraim. I'm not bound by a Memra of Amoraim. I'm an Amora. I'm only bound by statements from Tanaim, which is a Braita or a Mishnah. So I cannot be in conflict with the Braita or a Mishnah. But here, we have somebody qualified the Mishnah and said, oh, it depends which day he's working for whom he gets his payment. That's a Memra of Amoraim. Rava says, I don't agree with it. I disagree. I'm able to argue on a Memra of Amoraim, and that'll be the answer. Rava says, that's wrong. That statement is wrong. There's another view or a possible view here, which is, like we were saying, theoretically, you would assume that half goes to him and half goes to him. And that's the way that I believe, that like the Braita says by death, the same thing will be true by Nezek, and there'll be no difference between the cases. And I disagree with that Memra completely. So that's a third possibility of how to reconcile between that qualification of our Mishnah and this Braita. So again, we have three ways to deal with it. Either to say it's Abaye, and Abaye can explain the difference between Kal Yakarna versus Nezek, or it's a case where it's Adama Mazik, where even Rava could explain it, because by Adam HaMazik is chayav for all Chamishat Dvarim, and therefore it would be equally applicable, you could differentiate again. Or, it's Rava, it's a case of Shor HaMazik, but still, Rava would just say, I don't think that that statement is right. I have my view, and my view disagrees with that statement, and I'm allowed to disagree, because it's not a Tanaic work. Alright, Ibai Elohu, Mi'ukav get shichrur, yesh lo knas, o ein lo knas. So this goes back to all those cases that we said in the last number of Dapim, where the Eved went free, but he still requires a get shichrur, meaning that his monetary ownership has been transferred to him, in cases like Mafkir Avdo, Makdish Avdo, all those cases where he gains monetary ownership over himself, but he still requires a get shichrur to release the Isur for himself. So in a sense, he's not an Eved Knani for monetary matters, but he's an Eved Knani mitzad Isur. Then something happens, he's killed by a shore. What happens to the knas in that case? Kesef shloshim shkalim itin the adonav amar rachmana. The pasuk says you give 30 shekel kesef to his master. Vaylav adonu. And here this guy is not his master anymore because he doesn't have monetary ownership in him. Odilma came into mechusar get shichur adon karinan bay. Or maybe because there's still a lack of a document of emancipation that still makes him an owner in some way. He's still an adon, maybe not adon in the sense of monetary ownership, but he's an adon in the sense that he determines the fate of this Eved Kanani, because until he gives him a get shechur, this Eved Kanani is still subject to the Isurim of Eved Kanani. Tashma, meet Mishachetzio Eved Vechetzio Ben Chorin, this Braita that we just brought before, if he kills someone who's half Eved, half Ben Chorin, notain chetzi knas rabo, chetzi kofer the Yerushav. My love, ke Mishnah Achrona. This is a case of the Mishnah Achrona. If it's a case of the Mishnah Achrona, what's the rule in the Mishnah Achrona? The rule is in the Mishnah Achrona that we compel the second owner to free him, to give him a get shichrur. Or in essence, we basically tell the Eved he's free, and then, but we're just waiting to get the get shichrur. So it's the equivalent case that what we're looking for. And that means that even in that case, we say that the Knas is paid to the Adon. Half the Knas goes to the Adon. So you see the Adon is still entitled to Knas. But it says, lo, that's not the case. Kamishna Rishona. It's like the Mishnah Rishona, where he really still had full ownership in the Eved. It's the case, like what Beit Hillel says, we don't compel the second owner to do it, but rather, he owns himself for one day, and the owner owns himself the other day. So that means that there's real ownership. The Adon has real 50% ownership in his Eved, both for Mammon, as well as for Isur. I mean, that he has both types of ownership here, and that's why he's a full-fledged Adon, at least for 50% of this Eved. So Tashma, here we have another case. He pillaged Shino Misimeyateino. He knocked out his tooth, and then he blinded him in the eye. Yotze b'shino, benotein d'me'eino. Then he goes free with the knocking out of his tooth, and he gets paid for the value, the loss of value for his eye. That has to do with an Eved Kanani. An Eved Kanani, the rule is if you do damage to an Eved Kanani that's significant enough, he gains his freedom from that damage. So the examples in the Torah are Shein and Ayin. If he knocks out a tooth, if he knocks out an eye, then the Eved goes free. So over here, he did both things. He knocked out his tooth and his eye. So the first thing gains the Eved his freedom. The second thing, the Eved is already free, then he's a free man that he injured. He's got to pay him for the value of the loss of the eye, the damage, like any other person. V'yamart ishlo knas, v'knas l'rabo. If you say that in a case where he's lacking a get shichrur, then the knas goes to his master, the hashto chavli ble achrine yavi le the rabbe. In a case where it's a third party that damages him, the value goes to his master. And certainly when the master himself is the one doing the damage, the payment should come to him. What the Gemara assumes here is that when he knocks out his tooth or knocks out his eye, then he goes free, but he still needs a get shichrur from his master. He's granted his freedom. His ownership is his now because it's automatic. The Torah says he goes free. But then the master has to give him a document of emancipation to seal that freedom. So what we're suggesting here is that it's a case where, exactly what we're looking for, monetary ownership belongs to the Eved, the Isur belongs to the master. And what does it say here? That the money goes to the Eved. Well, if the money goes to the Eved, then that shows you that the master has nothing here, because in a case where someone else does damage the Eved, you're saying pay the master. When the master himself does damage the Eved, it should be paying himself. He shouldn't go to the Eved. So that's a proof. The Gemara says, guilt of command Amar, eno tzarich. Who says here that the case where he knocks out his tooth or his eye, that he really needs to get shichrur? That's a machloket as to whether you need to get shichrur in that case. Netanya, bikulan Eved yotzei behen lecherut. With all of these items, an Eved goes free. Now, Eved goes free with Shein Ayin, and all the Rosh Varim, the basic qualification is it has to be Nezik Bigalui. It has to be something that's visible damage. And number two is permanent damage, something that does not grow back, that does not come back. So those are two qualifications, the type of damage that he does, that will free him. So Bukulan, in all those cases, Eved Yotzei Behen Lecherut, Eved goes free. Tzarich Get Shichrur Mi Rabo. And he needs a document of emancipation from his master, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, or the other possibility is that it's Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir Omer, Eino Tzarich. Rabbi Meir says he doesn't need to get Shechur. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Tzarich. Blessed says he does need to get Shechur. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Eino Tzarich. He doesn't need to get Shechur. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Tzarich. Rabbi Kiva says he does need to get Shechur. Hamachri'in lifnei Chachamim Omrim. Those that make decisions in front of the Chachamim, meaning this is some Tana who is paskening halacha, we don't know who it is, it's an anonymous Tana, says, Nirim Divrei Rabbi Tarfon B'Shein Ba'ayin. Rabbi Tarfon seems right when you're talking about a tooth or an eye. Rabbi Tarfon says you do not need a get shichur. Ho v'Torah zachtalo, because those are explicitly written in the Torah, and the Torah grants him his freedom. V'divrei Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva who says that he does require a get shichur, b'shar evarim. That's true when it happens to be any other limb that qualifies through a klalu prat tuchlau that the Gemara darshins, that not only is a Shein and Ayin give him freedom, but anything that has, as I said before, mum shibigaloi and a permanent damage, through that are included the 24 Roshei Evarim that are relevant by Nigaim, that are here listed by Rashi, the fingers, the toes, the nose, the ears, and the private parts of the men and the women. So those are all included in this ribui. Frisim. Hoel v'knas chachamim ho. Since it's simply a fine of the chachamim, therefore you cry as a get shechor. The Gemara asks right away, knas? What do you mean a knas? Hakroi kardashinan. This is a drosha from the psukim. This is a klal upratu klal, which is one of the shloshes suyim midot shetori din dreshif. And you don't call that a knas chachamim. Elaim ahoel midrash chachamim ho. It is a drosha of the chachamim. Now, it's very interesting only because that means that you have two dinim d'oraita that derive from the same part of the Torah. One derives from Torah shebichtav, and one derives from Torah shebaal peh, and we're saying there's a difference in the halacha because of that. That's very strange, because why would you, if they're both dinim d'oraita, one is written explicitly, one is a derivative of Torah shebaal peh, but they're both d'oraita, they should have the same din. Here you're differentiating in the din, which is a very strange thing. You have Torah shebichtav versus Torah shebaal peh, you're coming out with a different din. So if you look at the Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam says over here, our fear is that after he does some damage to him and he goes free, he'll find him in the shuk and say, you're my slave. Why are you out here free? And nobody will know. He doesn't have any evidence that he's a free man. But he says, when it comes to a shein and ayin, we don't worry about it because it's go to cheder. Anybody who learns in cheder knows that shein ayin, the guy goes free. So what Rabbeinu Tam says in the end is that the din is the same. He doesn't require a get shechur. The demand for get shechur is because of the problems that could come up afterwards. It's not an inherent demand for get shechur. The get shechur is just because, unless it's obvious that he was set free or he has some sort of evidence, we're going to demand a get shechur. By shame v'ayim, it's so obvious, so they don't require a get shechur. But that means underlying this that the din d'oraita, whether it's Torah shebichtav, Torah shebaal-peh, is the same. It's just whether we're choshesh for other people's view of that, and that's why he requires to get shikur. Now, that in of itself also should, in a sense, cause a problem here, because then, versus the other cases where we require get shikur, in the other cases, it might mean that he requires to get shikur d'oraita. Over here, seemingly, only requires to get shikur midei rabbanan, and therefore, you should, that in of itself should cause a differential between these cases. The Gemara already rejected it and said it's according to one who says, enu tzarich get shikur, and therefore, you can't prove anything. But the truth is, even according to the one who says get shichrur, you could also say there's no proof from here, because the demand for get shichrur here is not inherently he requires a get shichrur, but rather to prevent problems in the future. There is an alternate view that the limud comes out of a riboy from chofshi yishalchenu, and then you have a gzeira takatuv that is mikasher between shlicha to eved and shlichut isha. That says, just like Isha requires a get, so to an Eved will require a get in these scenarios. And therefore, the nature or the source of the limud actually makes a difference in whether you need a get shechrur, because shein v'ayin, which are written explicitly, are not then subject to this hekesh to Isha, whereas these other items that are included through the limud are learnt out of a word that has a kesher to Isha, and because of that, they will require a get shechrur. So here, again, a similar type of question. We didn't answer the question about does he get kenas or does he not get kenas, but similar genre of question in a case where he's freed monetarily, but he still doesn't have a get shechrur and requires a get shechrur. Can he eat chuma? The Eved is allowed to eat chuma when he is owned by the Kohen because he's kinyan kaspo. Says kinyan kaspo, he's entitled to that. So that's what he says. Kinyan kaspo marchmana, v'alav kinyan kaspo. He's no longer owned monetarily by the adon because he's no longer kinyan kaspo. Odel ma kevin de bechusa get shichur kinyan kaspo b'kirinim. Maybe the lack of a get shichur meets him owned, quote unquote, by this master, even though he's not monetarily owned, but he's still the kinyan kesef because he controls his fate. That's enough. Tashma. Dama Rav Misharshia. So let's prove it from this. Kohenet, shenitarev vlada bevlad shivchata. You have a Kohenet who gives birth to a Kohen. And then you have the shivcha of the Kohen who gives birth to a baby. Both of them are entitled to eat truma, the baby of the Kohenet because he is a Kohen, and the baby of the shivcha because he is an eved to a Kohen. So in both instances, they're entitled to eat truma, but they got mixed up. They can both eat truma because either way, they're entitled to truma. But if we go to distribute truma to them at the silos, then you only give one portion to both of them. That has to do with the Gemara and Yevamot that discusses whether we're male mitruma l'duchan, which is, or basically the yuchsin. That if people collect truma at the goren, then do we automatically assume that they are kohanim? And so therefore, if this guy goes and gets truma independently, we're going to assume he's a kohen. And the truth is, only one of these two guys is a kohen. And so they have to go together to take their from the goren so that we don't make a mistake of being male one of them mitruma l'yuchsin, or to the duchan. So higdilu tarovot, once they both become of age, mishachrim zedzeh, they free each other. Because one of them is a kohen, and one of them is an eved. But they're both entitled to truma, and that will continue to be the case. The problem now is they can't get married. Because one of them is an eved kunani, and one of them is a kohen, and we don't know which is which. So they free each other. So that way, at least they both now can marry a bat chorin. We still won't know who's a kohen or is not a kohen. At least now they can get married. Now, Tosafot over there says that, doesn't the Gemara in Yevamot tell us that you're only considered to be a kohen if you know who your father is? That you have to be miyuchas to your father in order to have a status of a kohen. The Gemara there asks the question as well, and the answer that the Gemara gives is, that's only either a din derabanan, that it's an imposition derabanan, that to be miyuchas to your father, or, over here, they got mixed up after they were born. So at the time of their birth, at the time that he was born, the father was known, and then later on they got mixed up, and that caused the problem only happened afterwards. So there was a point in time where he really was a Kohen, and then afterwards it became a problem. It wasn't that they were born and never knew. Those are the two possibilities to deal with that. Hachi Ashto, the Gemara says these aren't comparable cases. Now, over there, the question is he a Kohen or is he an Eved Kenani? So you're telling me that he doesn't own him monetarily because in the end they're going to free each other. So in the end, basically, they're both free men just waiting to their get shichur. So each one of them can give each other a get shichur. That's not exactly the scenario. The truth is, if Eliyahu Navi shows up and tells us, this guy was the Eved, this guy's the Kohen, that guy will go back to being an Eved, and that guy will be a Kohen. Meaning that it's a safek that leads us to this outcome, but inherently, one of them is an Eved Kenani, one of them is a Kohen. In our case here, Hachalav Kinyan Kaspo Uklal. Over here, even if Eliyahu Navi shows up, doesn't change the fact that he doesn't have monetary ownership in this Eved Kenani. He only has Iser ownership in this Eved Kenani. So you can't prove anything from our case. The cases are completely different. Our case is a case where there's no monetary ownership left. The case of the mix-up with the Kohanim, there's still monetary ownership, but just because we can't figure it out, we say that they can't enslave either of them. But that's not because there isn't Kinyan Kaspo. There is Kinyan Kaspo, just not known who the owns and who is the owner. Yibayelo, Eved Shemachro Rabo Leknas. Machor Einu Machor. So you have an enterprising master. He says, listen, there's a possibility that this Eved could be killed by a Shur Mu'ad. And if that happens, I'll collect 30 shekel. I'm going to sell that right to someone else. Is he able or is he capable of selling that right to someone else? He's basically selling futures option on this Eved Kenani, which if he gets killed by a Shur and there's 30 shekel of Knas, you own it. So he's getting, obviously the guy's not going to pay him 30 shekel for that today. He's going to pay some sort of discounted value of that. And you could formulate this sale in one of two ways. You can say either he sells the goof of the Eved for this particular event, or he sells a right to the Knas. Most of the Rishonim favor the first formulation, because then it's much more similar to a deco that produces fruit, and an Eved who you own his goof for anything that happens or any output at that time. And Knas is one of those outputs that he has at that moment. Tibayla Rabbi Meir, Tibayla Rabbanan. This is a question going to Rabbi Meir and a question going to the Rabbanan. Tibayla Rabbi Meir, it's a question for Rabbi Meir. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Meir adam makne davar shelo bale olam. Ela kagon perot tekel davidi de'atu. The fact that I'm describing it as futures means that this is an intangible object that does yet to exist. It's something in the future. So that's what we call davar shelo bale olam. Davar shelo bale olam is a machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether you can be maknet. You can have kinyanim and davar shelo bale olam. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, yes, that you can have kinyanim and davar shelo bale olam. Chamim say you cannot have a kinyan and davar shelo bale olam. Gemara says, even according to Rabbi Meir, who says that you can have a kinyan and davar shelo bale olam, that's only something like fruits on a tree. Because fruits on a tree are something where the, we call it the principle, or the tree exists. And trees, by nature, give fruit. So it's something that's almost an inevitable future possibility, which is the fruits will be on the tree. So when you sell them, even though you're selling something that doesn't exist today, in all likelihood, those items will be here because the tree is here. And trees produce fruit. Unless something dramatic happens, that will be the most likely outcome. Over here, it's not inevitable that he will be killed by Yeshua and the Knas will be paid. Meaning that he's selling him an option in the future, a futures option. So as opposed to selling futures, which Rabbi Meir says is okay, because it's inevitable that it will happen, selling a futures option he does not maybe allow, because that's not inevitable. The fact that it's an option already makes it not inevitable, and maybe you can't sell it. So that's what Gemara says, to buy the Rabbi Meir. Maybe Rabbi Meir only says that you can sell futures, not futures options. V'imtim salomar demingach, mimai demishalim. And even if you say that it happens, meaning that there are two outcomes. One is that he doesn't get killed by a shore. But even if he does get killed by a shore, who says he's going to get paid? Doma modeu miftar. So not the case that the guy doesn't have money, but rather it's a case where he's modeu miknas, and modeu miknas is potor. So the guy comes along and says, modeu, yeah, my shore killed this Eved Kenani, he's not going to pay anything. So there are, in a decision tree, on the first side, possibly he never gets killed by a shore. So there's no knas to talk about. The other side is he gets killed by a shore. Even under that, there's another branch in the decision tree, which is maybe he pays knas, maybe he doesn't pay knas. So in this case, you're not talking about even a 50-50 probability. You're talking about something that is below 50-50, probably a lot below 50-50, just in the fact that whether he gets killed by a shore or not. But even if he gets killed by a shore, there's still no certainty that he's going to get paid the knas. And therefore, maybe Rabbi Meir in that case will say you can't make a kinyan, you can't sell such an item. And within this, you could even come up with different gradations, which is perot hadekel or something that happened naturally. It's a phenomenon of nature that will happen. There are other things that are within control of the individual. So even though they may not be inevitable, but since the individual can control them, maybe that's enough of a reason to say that you're able to make a kinyan, even though it's a davar shel bal olam. Or there are items that are not inevitable and they're not in your control, like our situation here. So our situation is on that bottom level in terms of gradations of davar shelo b'olam, and therefore Rabbi Meir might agree in this case that you cannot acquire such a right because it's so far-fetched in nature. B'tibay l'rabbanan. You can even ask him according to Rabbanan. Ad kan lo kamei Rabbanan ein adam makneh davar shelo b'olam elo kogon perot dekel dahashta mi'alitnu. Because right now they don't exist. Aval halka hakai shor v'hakai evet. Over here, the two parties that create this eventuality exist, which is the Eved here and the Shor is here. The question if they meet, that's a separate question. But if they do meet in the future, they existed today. So you're selling something that technically existed in the world today, even though the event is something that would take place in their future. So maybe even the Rabbanan would agree in this case you can sell this because it's not an intangible item in the sense that the killer and the victim are existing today. It's only tangible in the sense that it's in a future event that could take place. But other than that, it's everything exists today. So maybe the Rabbanu would agree you pay it. My, what's the din? Why does the Torah have to tell you about a yelid bayit, someone that's born in his household? It says here about a kohen, that the kohen's ownership, whether it's kinyan kaspo, he purchased him, or he was born in his household, both of them are entitled to eat truma. Im kinyan kesef ochel. If he purchases an eved, the eved eats truma. Yilid bayit lo koshkei. Then certainly an eved that's born in his household should be able or entitled to eat truma. Why does the Torah have to tell you both of them? Because ilu kein hayiti omer ma kinyan kesef sheyesh bo shava kesef ochel af yilid bayit sheyesh bo shava kesef ochel. So what I would have thought is just like a kinyan kesef can only eat if he has value, because you only purchase an Eved that has value. You're not going to purchase an Eved that has no value. So what you see from that is that a Kinyan Kesef is entitled to Truma, but maybe that is qualified by the fact that he has to be of some value. So since he has value, therefore he eats Truma, because that's the only reason you would purchase him. So too, a Yid Bayit then would be governed by that the Yid Bayit has to have value in order for him to partake in Truma. Uminayin Shafu Pishenu Shavek Klum. How do you know if he's worthless today that you still, he's entitled to Truma because he's considered to be a part of the Kohen's family? Tamalomer, Yilid Bayit, Mikol Makom. Yilid Bayit says, born in the household, irrespective of value, you get to eat Truma. Vadayin Ani Omer, Yilid Bayit, Ben Sheyesh Bo Shava Kesef, Ben Sheyesh Bo Shava Kesef. Then I would say, someone born into the household doesn't have to have a value, and therefore he's Ochel, he eats. Kinyan Kesef, but Kinyan Kesef should still be governed by the fact that he has to have value. Yesh bo sheva kesef ochel, ein bo sheva kesef ein ochel. Talmud lomar, kinyan paspo be yelid bayit. The pasuk has both of them there to make a hekesh between them. Ma yelid bayit, afu pishenu sheva klom, ochel. Just like a yelid bayit, an evan born in the house of the Kohen eats, irrespective of his value. Af kinyan kaspo, afu pishenu sheva klom, ochel. Even though he's valueless, he eats. If you think that an Eved who sold for his Knas is considered to be sold, he says, then every Eved by definition has value. No Eved is valueless. You could claim here, oh, the guy is worthless now. He's never worthless because by definition a Knas doesn't look at the value of the individual. It's a fixed payment. That means if an Eved Kenani is killed by a shor, then he has value because he could get paid 30 shekel. Even if he's worthless, he gets paid the 30 shekel, the Adom. That means if the Adom can sell that value, that means that an Eved is never valueless because he can always monetize the possibility of him being killed by a shor and getting that knas of 30 shekel. What the Gemara is proving me here is says that you can't sell it. Otherwise, what is this brayta talking about, a valueless Eved? How do you have a valueless Eved if he can always sell that item? Gemara says, in Ika Eved Treifa. There's a case where the Eved is a treifa. If the Eved is a treifa, he's valueless because then he's not considered to be killing a live person. He's killing a dead person. He is inevitably going to die now. A person who has one of the treifa that an animal would have, which basically the definition of a treifa is that he has some sort of fatal ailment of some sort that will cause him to die within the next 12 months. So in terms of killing the Eved, there's no longer any 30 shekel in that time period because he's killing a dead man, basically. He's a dead man walking. And if he kills him, he's not going to be chayav because he killed someone who's already quote-unquote dead, even though he accelerated their death. Yes, he will die in the next 12 months. But in the interim, he has value for his output or for his servicing the Adon during that period. So you're telling me he's valueless just because he's a treifa? That's not true. He may not be able to collect the 30 shekel, but he's valuable for another reason, which is that he can function during that period of time. Where it says, no, it's been menuval u'mukeshchin. Not only is he a treifa, but he's also someone's nuval mukashkin, which makes him valueless in terms of his service and valueless in terms of his death. But anyway, what you see here is you can't have a valueless Eved, even though maybe the Adon could sell an Eved for his shloshim shekel, for the knas. Because there are cases where you will not be able to sell him for his shloshim shekel. So here we have a case where we come up with a worthless Eved, and still it doesn't reflect anything to us. It's not determinant with regards to our question before, which is, can an Adon sell the future rights to the shloshim shekel if the Eved gets killed by a shor that gores him? Because you can come up with a scenario of him being valueless. And again, we're inconclusive. So we've had three of these questions where each time the Gemara tries to prove it and we're left inconclusive, which is, an Eved which only is Me'akev with regards to a Get Shechror, does the Adon get Knas or not get Knas? That was our first question. Second question is, if he doesn't have Kinyan Kaspo but only has Get Shechror, can he eat Shumar, can he not eat Shumar? And the third question was, can the Adon sell Shloshim Shekel Kesef that he's entitled to if the Eved is killed when he owns the Eved completely? Can he sell the future option of him being killed by a shor, those 30 shekel, can he sell it? And again, we are left with an inconclusive answer. We might try to bring a proof, but in the end says it's not a good proof. Okay, we're going to stop here about halfway down Mem Gimel Amud Aleph.